Now time for Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmental responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Top Hat Entertainment, helping you with all your party needs from DJs to inflatables. They have it all. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining the right mortgage can be. And Momento's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners. Williston location, 879-1000. This is Sports Saturday, living the dream and taking you with us on 101.3 The Game.
We are living the dream and taking you with us. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I'm your host, Jeff Paul. The big fella, Bernie Siplicki's doing his day job today. Sitting in the big chair today with me is my good buddy from the Burlington Free Press, award-winning sports writer, Austin, the Big D, Danforth. What's happening, buddy?
Sup, Jeff?
655-667, news number to call if you want to join this conversation today. It's good to have you back, Aaron, from your like week layoff with your beautiful girlfriend. Took some time off this week, last week. Missed you, but, you know, it's good to have you back.
It's good to be back. As much as I had fun on my little vacation, I really missed you guys.
Yeah, well, we missed you too.
Where'd you go?
Oh, look at this guy.
I went to Massachusetts.
Ooh. A little romantic away.
I hear it's lovely there this time of year.
Sure.
Beautiful foliage. Well, I'm glad you're back because, you know, basically Brady filled in for you and spent the whole segment of our Hot or Not bashing our segment, not liking our segment.
I know, that's sad to hear. That segment's my baby, man. I like to give some hot takes.
Well, we were happy to have Brady in studio, but man, he gives a hard time about our Hot or Not.
I just don't know as he gets the segment, which is okay.
Yeah.
You know, some people aren't geared towards the hot take life, you know?
He might just not be a Saturday morning radio guy. We don't know that.
And that could
be,
and listen, it's a lot like you. You're not much of a Saturday morning guy, but you got up for us this morning.
I'm not much of a morning guy. Especially after, you know, being in the newsroom till like after 1 a.m.
And we're going to talk about that because last night was a crazy night in high school football in the state of Vermont. We'll talk about it in a minute. And by the way, just in case you're wondering, the Mega Millions now is at $1.6 billion. Nobody won last night. So the numbers last night were, Austin, were 15. Here's the thing about this.
Let me pull out my ticket.
I'll tell you if you want anything. So the numbers last night were 15, 23, 53, 65, and 70 with the Mega Ball of 7. And here's the thing. Now, do you do the easy pick or do you actually pick your numbers when it comes to this stuff?
I do the easy pick.
And I just wonder because I feel like, so here's the thing. I'm looking at this. 15 is a number that I think if I was picking myself, it's a number I would pick.
I got that on one.
23 is a number I absolutely pick being a big Don Mattingly and Michael Jordan fan.
I got that on two of them.
53 was Harry Carson. I can see myself picking that.
I got 52 on one. All right.
65 was Bart Oates. Okay. 65 lineman for the Giants back in the day. I'd pick that. Number 70 was Leonard Marshall. So I could definitely see myself picking that. And number 7 is the great Mickey Mantle. So maybe I have to figure this out. Maybe I have to start picking my own numbers. I could have won $1 billion last night.
But now if those become your numbers, you'll never win again.
I'll never win again. Yeah. I'm not going to use them now. It's not going to happen again. But now I'm looking at those. I'm like, all those numbers mean something to me. That could have been my thing. But I always do the easy pick as well.
Yeah. Because like you're going to game it and figure out, like, crack the code. Come on.
Well, so I've always tell this story. And by the way, if you want to join our conversation, we got a lot to talk about. 655-6672 is the number to call. If you want to text us on the Town Fair Tire text line, you can do that as well. 802-655-6672. If you want to join our conversation, and we have got so many things to talk about. Obviously, the Red Sox are in the World Series. You know, listen, I'm sure you're very excited about that. We'll get to that a little bit later on. We're going to talk Patriots with Tom King, our insider for the New England Patriots. Tom King's going to join us at 10:20. The NBA has started up at 11 o'clock. We're going to talk to Ian Levy, NBA insider for fansided.com. And then get your fantasy football questions ready as Jake Kent is back from Florida. And we're going to answer all your questions at 11:20. But when it comes to this lottery pick, you know, I'm telling you, like I, the story that I go back to all the time is I used to work in the early 2000s. I worked at the Boys and Girls Club of Burlington, and there was a family there that got a lottery ticket every single day, every single week. And this one particular week, he forgot to go get the lottery ticket, and the wife was at home alone and saw the numbers come up, and the numbers they picked every week won, and he forgot to go get it, and they didn't win. Is that not crazy?
That's absolutely crushing.
It's crazy, crushing. But so you want to know what the odds are to win this? So right, it's $1.6 billion now, and the odds of winning are 1 in 302.5 million.
That makes sense. I mean, probably every, that's more or less every adult in America buying 2 to 3 tickets.
Yeah. But I can't imagine that those numbers, because I think there's probably people out there that actually pick the same, that those numbers, 15, 23, 53, 65, 70, and the Mega Ball 7 didn't come up. I'm shocked at that. But hey, listen, it's still out there for everybody. I think the next drawing is, what, on Tuesday night?
Yep, Mega Mills, because I'm plugged into
this. So you're in this.
You're Mega Mills are Tuesday, Friday. Powerball is Wednesday, Saturday.
And I find myself, because I usually play Powerball when I do play. I usually only play the lottery when the numbers are like astronomically
right,
high.
Right, I got to get over 300 mil.
Yeah, to make it worth my while. Just to stop in and do it. But the Powerball I get, but when I go to get these Mega Million tickets, I'm not sure how it works. So I feel like when I'm ordering coffee at Starbucks. I'm always intimidated to go to Starbucks and order coffee because, first of all, the people that are in there, the customers know what they want, and it's all very long-winded, and it's all usually it's tough to pronounce the things that you want to get there.
Right,
and the sizing. So whenever I go in there, I'm like prepared. I got notes. Like, you know, my wife wants me to go in to get her non-fat caramel skim mochiaco latte, whatever I got to get. You know, I'm always like focused. But when I go in to get these tickets, like I went in the other day and I said, I need some Mega Millions. Here's $20. I need $20 worth of Mega Millions. Well, do you want to megaply it? I don't know. Here's 20. I just need as many as I can get. So I'm confused on how to do it anyway. But anyway, $1.6 billion on Tuesday. Get your tickets. Me and Austin are going to get our tickets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We'll move on.
We're winning.
Yeah. What if you won?
I've got it gamed out. That's why I'm pretty religious about playing once it gets over 300 mil, because if it's at 299 million, that's not going to change my life. But once we get over 300 million, you know, then we're talking.
I wish everybody was in here when Austin first came in. I said, hey, we're going to talk about the Mega Millions. He goes, oh, what was it? I said, well, here are the numbers. And he's like, oh, I didn't win. And so the first thing he says to me is, I said, can you imagine you win $1 billion? He goes, I'd be out buying an NFL team. Who wants to sell an NFL team? And I said that to myself, man, if I won $1 billion, it'd just be like, hands up, goodbye, see you later.
I probably wouldn't buy an NFL team, but $1.6 billion, you could come close.
Yeah.
I'd buy like an MLS team and just putz around.
Oh, there you go. See, I would just putz around anyway. I don't know if I could just putz around forever, but man, I would travel for a... it'd be like, okay, take care of all my family, good friends, take care of people, you know, that I need to take care of, and then have some fun.
Right.
I just can't imagine the feeling of winning $1 billion, but the opportunity is going to be out there for everybody. So last night, I got to get into this with you. If you haven't followed Austin on Twitter or see what he wrote in the Burlington Free Press, last night was a crazy night, Austin, if you're a high school football fan.
Alex Abrami spent most of Wednesday and Thursday doing the math with the QPR to figure out who would land where if so-and-so won, because the QPR, which is how they decide the high school playoff rankings and seedings, it's a strength of schedule setup where you get points for a win, and then you get points for the wins that teams you beat accrue. So anyway, last night, South Burlington had to win to get in, and they had to do so against Rutland, who hadn't lost in a month and looked like the team to beat. They pull it out in OT. Hartford seems to be one of the toughest teams in the state. Essex scuffling this year. They were 1-6 going in. Essex takes the lead in the fourth quarter, gives it up, then wins it in the final minute, 21-17. I was at Colchester for Colchester versus Rice. Rice cruises down the field on their first possession, scores 8-0. Then they cough the ball up 4 times in a row. Colchester scores on 3 of those. 28 unanswered points, second half shutout. Wow, Rice lost. Then you're looking, where else are we here? BFA had to win at Brattleboro to have even a chance. They did that, but they needed Colchester and or BHS South Burlington to lose. Neither of those happened. Bob Whites are out after being one of only 2 teams to beat Rutland. So you're looking at the standings. Right now, St. Johnsbury, as it stands, and St. Johnsbury, MMU, both have to play.
Right.
St. Johnsbury is the 8 seed, and they were one of the preseason favorites, as it stands now. Rice is a 4 seed. MMU is a 5 seed if they don't win. Rutland is currently number 1. Middlebury is 2. Hartford is 3. If MMU and St. Johnsbury win, we're looking at MMU as the 1 seed, Rutland's the 2, Hartford's the 3.
So if MMU wins today,
They're number one.
They jump 4 spots to
they
number 1.
They jump 5 spots.
Five spots to number 1. That's incredible.
St. Johnsbury, if they win, they're the 6th seed at 6-2 with maybe the best offense in the state. Definitely one of the 2 best quarterbacks in the state with Jake Cady. Now, it gets really crazy if somehow Fairhaven beats MMU. And it's not a given that MMU is going to win. MMU has been playing great football the last month, but Fairhaven can score points with anybody Cam Kaluti. If Fairhaven wins and St. Johnsbury wins, MMU will be stuck at the 6th seed. St. Jay will be the 5 seed. And then we'll have a tie that is likely going to go to a coin flip between Middlebury and Rice.
For the
3 and the 4 seed.
Okay.
If
you following us, everybody? Everybody following us? There'll be a quiz.
It's absolutely crazy. And if MMU wins and St. Jay loses, there's still going to be a tie between Middlebury and Rice for the 4 and the 5 seed. So, like, they would, if it would be the coin flip to see who plays each other. But, like, none of, like, this is, like, one of the least likely combinations of stuff that could happen. It had no idea. Like, I'm sitting there doing math at 10:30 last night, and thankfully, I don't think I screwed it up.
Has there been a year, say, in the last 10 years, Austin, that you've seen this kind of parody in high school football?
No. We're pushing probably 15 or 20 years, if that. Like, there, you look at the likely way it's going to, I mean, Fairhaven and or MMU and St. Jay are favored to win.
Yep.
So if you look at that, MMU is the 1, Rutland's the 2, Hartford's the 3, Rice is the 4, Mid's the 5, St. Jay is 6, Burlington, South Burlington, who just beat Rutland, is 7, and Colchester is 8. I think any of those top 7 teams have a legit shot to win. You look at St. Jay as a possible 6 seed. They haven't stopped a lot of people, but only 2 teams would have stopped them at that point.
Yeah.
I'm looking at them. You play Hartford the 1st round, Rutland the 2nd. That Rutland 2nd round is going to be tough. But,
well, just opening up with a Hartford-St. Jay 1st round football game is insane.
Right. Or you go MMU with the potential of playing Mid or Rice in the 2nd round. That's a toss-up, too. I don't know. It's crazy. Looking at St. Jay, the preseason potential number 1 as the 6th seed makes no sense.
Now, is it just a basis that we've got a lot of good football teams in this state, or is it a basis of what we're seeing, what we've seen, what we talked about before the season, the numbers are down everywhere, and so now you're starting to see the competition is just, I mean, it brings parity back to football.
You get a couple teams that have, you know, high school weeks and make mistakes, and all of a sudden, you know, they lost a game close that they probably should have won. Then you have a couple teams that are, you know, smaller numbers of kids that make a difference. One of those kids goes down, all of a sudden a team loses a game that they probably should have won because they didn't have a guy they needed. And so, yeah, I mean, there's going to be 2 6-win teams, or maybe 3 6-win teams, 5 5-win teams in the top of Division I. Usually, like, the last 3 teams, it's like a 4-4 mess to get in. Because one or two teams have separated themselves at 8-0 or 7-1 or something like that. I can't keep up with the way these games have gone. Like, we try and pick it every week, and we think we feel pretty good, and then Saturday night comes around, we tally up the picks for the football forecast, and all of a sudden, oh, wow, we're idiots.
Burlington, South Burlington gets a huge win, but built a pretty good lead against Rutland from what I was reading last night, and Rutland found a way to come back into the game and actually had the ball inside the 10-yard line.
An
opportunity to win the football game in Burlington's help and make the big play. Do you still feel that Rutland is a team to beat in this scenario? Is right now, really, it's a coin flip?
I think so, because I look at it like Rutland 6-2. They lost to BHS South Burlington last night on a game. BHS South Burlington is a good team. They were on the verge of losing by maybe, I think their first 3 losses were by a combined 11 or 12 points.
Yeah.
Like that, and they could have gone home as the as a 4-4 team with losses to 4 good teams. Instead, you know, they pulled out 1 good win against Rutland. Rutland, their only other loss was a crazy fourth quarter comeback by BFA, which is maybe the most vexing game of the season.
Yeah,
BFA doesn't make the playoffs. They beat Rutland. BFA had to pounce on 2 Rutland fumbles in the last half of the fourth quarter to have a chance. They were down by 2 touchdowns with like 6 minutes to go. So,
craziness ensued.
Yeah, that's why I think Rutland's still the team to beat, because they played the most strong games.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
No, understood. And then so you, right now you think the favorites: Rutland, St. Johnsbury, Mount Mansfield's had a huge year.
Yeah, and it, like, as Hartford losing to Essex last night really sets off alarms for me.
Yeah,
Essex, tough year for them. But that's a game, a team that should vie for a championship should be able to go and get that W.
Yeah. Like,
instead of going and laying an egg at Essex.
It's a crazy time of year, and as we know, as the soccer seasons have come to a completion now. We're getting ready for playoffs for that next week, along with field hockey. You know, so there's a lot of stuff happening right now in the state of Vermont.
Yeah, I got a friend that coaches D4 Arlington girls. He's messaging me, what's the tiebreaker? Who won this game? Who won that game? because he's concerned about his semifinal opponent, doesn't know how the tiebreaker is going to work out.
Yeah, you got to get through the other ones first, Pop, before you worry about the semifinal.
D4 soccer is a little different than most of them. So when you have a juggernaut, like if you're Arlington or Proctor, you really probably shouldn't lose until you get to the final.
Yeah. It's a great time of year. If you haven't been to a high school game yet, check out. I mean, we say it all the time, especially during playoff time. Kids work so hard in the regular season to get themselves to this point. The playoffs start next week, and obviously we're not going to know anything about the high school football playoffs until the end of today.
Yeah. Yep.
Big time. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, if you need a shower after what Austin just went through, because I'm like exhausted.
I might need to shower.
Just listening to all that got me. I hope I just ran a marathon. Very coherent. Very, very well done. We're going to talk New England Patriots with our Patriot Insider, our good buddy Tom King. Don't go anywhere.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Good morning. It's 101.3 The Game Sports Saturday. I'm Jeff Paul. Austin Danforth filling in for Bernie Siplicki. Aaron Wells back from vacay. Just broke down the breakdown of the Vermont High School football playoffs, which is still, we have no clue what's going to happen here, but it looks like it's going to be a very exciting time to watch high school football, as well as all the fall sports that are happening. There's going to be a lot of crazy games coming up here in the next couple weeks. But talk about crazy. I mean, how about these New England Patriots?
Woo!
As the usual, early season, everyone writing them off. Brady's too old. They don't know what's following Belichick anymore.
They don't have enough talent.
Hey, yeah.
I told you guys, if they lost that game against the Dolphins, that's when I'd start being worried. And they didn't lose.
And they didn't lose. And they turned around and beat who I think is, I don't know. I think the LA Rams are the best team in football.
Agreed.
But they turned around and was able to beat a team in Kansas City that's as good as advertised, a great football team. The Patriots get it done again, and who better to talk to than, do you want to add something to that, kiddo?
They beat the best scoring offense in the league in a shootout.
Yep, very impressive. So who better to talk to than our good friend and Patriot insider right now in the TikTok Zero's guest line, Tom King. Good morning, Tom. Thanks for fitting us in today, buddy.
No, wait a minute. You didn't tell me there was going to be no Bernie. That's in my contract. Come on.
Sorry to disappoint, Tom.
Trust me, it's tough to lose Bernie, but let me tell you, bringing Austin Danforth in, it's like bringing Jeff Hostetler in the year that Giants lost Phil Sims. Like, you don't miss anything.
That worked.
You know, it's perfect.
That worked.
It's perfect.
As long as he doesn't try to take Bernie's job in the next season. That's when you get into trouble in the end. You get a broadcaster controversy and everything else. You don't want that to happen.
Austin is way too busy to be doing this radio show every day. Trust me, he's one of the biggest sports writers in Burlington, so we're lucky to have him on today.
Hey, that's good. You got one of the biggest sports writers in Nashville.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. I know, and that's just perfect for me. Ooh. It's a matter of the hack against two talented people. That's how it is. Hey, man.
Right, so here's the thing: did Austin cover a high school game last night?
I wasn't out of the newsroom till after 1 a.m. last night. So yes.
Okay. All right. All right,
let me just say this, Tom. If you could have heard our first segment, what's happening with Vermont high school football right now in Division I is insane. It is absolutely insane. We just broke the thing down for about a half an hour. It's crazy.
Yeah, ours don't start for another 2 weeks from today. It'll be the first playoff game. The final week of the regular season is next Friday.
Okay, that's what used to be that here, but they shortened the regular season by a week, extended playoffs by a week. So
yeah, that's always fun. You know, they'll never shorten the NFL season by a week. I guarantee you that.
Not happening.
Not happening at all.
Let's get into it, though. So, listen, first couple weeks of the season, everyone's nervous about the New England Patriots, but you can't be nervous anymore, right, buddy?
Well, I mean, you can and you can't. You know, everybody's buzzing, you know, where they were happy about the win over Kansas City, but they got torched for a lot of points. I mean, this defense is not that good right now. It's giving up a lot of points. Granted, it's a great offense they played, and, you know, and the Chiefs' defense is horrible, equally horrible, but they were missing two guys. So, you know, Houston and Eric Berry. So they had a little bit of an excuse. You know, the Patriots, after only giving up, what was it at halftime, 24-9, something like that, and after only giving up 9 points in the half, then all of a sudden, second half, they get torched, and they get torched by the big play. See, Belichick's trademark over the years that he's been here, everybody looks at Brady and everything else, but the one thing that when he's had really good teams, those defenses don't, they may bend, they don't do the bend and break, but what they don't do is they don't give up the big play. They give up the big play to the Chiefs. In fact, they have a history of giving up the big play to the Chiefs. They did it last year, you know, in the opener, in the season opener. So if I'm the Patriots, and if I'm a Patriots fan, I'm a little concerned about that. Otherwise, offensively, everything seems to be falling into place, except Gronkowski is probably not quite himself. Now we hear he's got a back problem compared, you know, to go with the ankle problem. I think that comes with being a tight end. I just think that he's banged up a little bit. But still, when they need a big play and a big catch, who do they go to? They go to Gronkowski. They just may not go to him 10 times a game. So, but with Gordon, and then you add, you know, bring in Edelman back. And what that does is, if you noticed, who had a good game, you know, who's had a good couple of good games recently has been Chris Hogan. And I think the reason is that he's not, everybody's not, you know, double and triple teaming him anymore. He's, you know, they've got to now watch other people so Hogan can get free. The running back, obviously, Sony Michel is, you know, more carries you get, the better you get. I mean, you know, he's not going to remind anybody of Deion Lewis, but he still is going to be a good serviceable back that, you know, with good blocking up front, and once he gets in the open field, shows his speed, is probably, he's probably destined to be a 1,000-yard rusher at some point in his career, this year maybe, but definitely probably in the next couple of years.
I'm looking at the offense as a Patriots fan. I like Sony Michel. I think he's somewhere between like a almost a Deion Lewis to LeGarrette Blount hybrid, like from a couple of years ago.
He's not like Blount.
I mean, no, but he occupies that middle ground because he can run tough a little bit. He can make a couple guys miss on the corner when he cuts back. At least right. That's what it looks like to me. And then
he's not going to carry 15 people on his back line.
Oh, no, that's why there's one LeGarrette Blount. Like that was the comparison for a little bit of power there with what he did. But the addition of Edelman and Gordon has seemed to make, like, to open everything up for everybody. It's a different team.
I mean, you've got, it should. Defensively, you've got to cover them. So that you've got to take people that you ordinarily use to, when you play the Patriots the first 3 or 4 weeks of the year, used to basically, you could double guys like Hogan and things like that because you knew they had to throw to them, you know, and just Dorsett and those people. And now you don't have that option anymore. You know, you've got to do a single coverage or a zone or whatever, and the Patriots will eat you up it that way. And so, yeah, you're going to add two receivers like Gordon and Edelman. You're going to get better offensively. If you don't, there's something wrong. So, and i.e. something wrong, see New York Giants. That'll tell you everything that's wrong right there.
Let me just say this, too, about you mentioned the defense. Like, does it really matter in today's NFL? Because all of the great teams, if you're looking at the team that the Patriots are going to have to beat to win a championship, first of all, you look at the AFC. You know, I understand the Jaguars have a great defense, but this offense now is going to eat up the Jaguars. I mean, the Jags can't score enough points to match their defense. I'm trying to figure out, I mean, the Rams don't play great defense, but they score a lot of points. Kansas City doesn't play great defense, but they score a lot of points. I mean, when you're looking at the teams out there that are going to compete with the Patriots, number one in the AFC, I don't see anybody, for the exception of maybe Kansas City and maybe the Jaguars on a perfect day. I know the Jags beat them already. But I will say that in terms of defense, this year in the NFL with the teams that are great, nobody's got great defenses, Tom. To me, I think the concern was that offense, and right now they're clicking, and if they keep clicking, I mean, they're going to score 40, 45 points a game routinely.
Well, it depends on who they play. It's, you know, you don't fall into that trap that, you know, okay, now we're offensively, we're great, and, you know, we're blowing everybody away because we're playing team, you know, playing the Dolphins in Foxborough, who never show up there. You know, last week's game with the Chiefs was obviously, you know, going to be a shootout at just the way those teams are. You're right about the defenses and everything else, but you lose Super Bowls because you don't play good defense. You know, you don't lose Super Bowls a lot of times because you can't, you know, muster enough offense. You lose Super Bowls because you don't play well defensively.
No, I mean, I get all
that. You know, yeah. So that's, you know, when it comes down to playing good teams, it's going to come down to the defensive game.
Eight months ago.
It won't be low scoring, but it's going to come down to who can make the defensive play. Now, one thing with this defense that's changed that I thought, you know, I really needed and wasn't getting the first couple of games is Dante Hightower. He's come to play now the last couple of weeks. So that's really given them a boost. So I think that you know, they need help. They definitely need some kind of boost on defense to be able to get big stops when they need it. But, you know, they're going to – it'll be interesting to see what happens on Sunday. The Bears are better offensively than people give them credit for. I think Trubisky's not a bad quarterback. He's got a guy who knows him in Nagy. The Chiefs worked Trubisky out a lot when he was coming out of the draft. So I think that, you know, you'll just have to see the evolution of this team, but you also have to look at the schedule. Remember last year, everybody thought their defensive problems were solved because they had a cupcake schedule in the second half. They were blowing, you know, they were mowing people over, and defensively they were playing great, but they weren't playing very talented teams or talented quarterbacks. You know, you have to look at who they're playing and see how that defense can rise to the occasion. And if that defense keeps faltering on big play situations, then you start to worry.
Well, you gave a great segue as tomorrow the Patriots do travel to Chicago, and you can hear all the action right here on 101.3 The Game. Coverage starts at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. But, you know, the Bears, a little of the gleam came off the pumpkin last week with that tough loss to Miami.
Right.
But a football team that going into that Miami game, people thought that was one of the best defenses in football. And it still may be. You've got Khalil Mack on that defense, which has been spectacular. And you're absolutely right. It's a very underrated offense the Bears have.
It is. You know, again, I think that they got the right coach for the quarterback, and they can go on from there. But what the Bears did when they went out to get Khalil Mack is try to reestablish what the Bears are, reestablish their identity, and that's defense. You know, they got a monster of the midway, more or less, you know, in Mack. Now, he's banged up a little bit. I guess his ankles are bothering him. So, who knows how he'll play? He will play, but who knows how he'll play on Sunday. The Patriots always seem to catch this break sometimes when the other teams have their best players that are hurt, but especially on the defensive side, but that may be the case on Sunday, so we'll have to wait and see. The Patriots offense on the road against a team that's got a defensive trademark, how will they do? We'll wait and see, and this will be a good test for them.
I'm not sure how big a role he might play Sunday if Mack is getting into the backfield around Brady, but watching Gordon the last couple weeks, and specifically last week, there was a couple throws, and it made me, I don't know, it was deja vu, and I'm not getting over my skis here, but like a couple of those throws that they didn't even hit, but like when Brady can put it up there down the field for Gordon, who's been it was shades of like Randy Moss light.
See, Gordon can go get it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Gordon, unlike some of the other guys, Hogan can do that, but Hogan really needs to be open to do that. Gordon can fight through a defender and get the ball. That's one of the great talents that he has and that he had coming out of college, is that if you throw the ball in his vicinity, he's going to get his hands on it somehow, some way, and that's what he does.
Okay, good.
He hasn't had that in a while, except for Gronkowski. You know, as a wide receiver, Brady really hasn't had that. I mean, you hit Edelman, but you don't hit Edelman, you know, Edelman makes his plays after the catch, I think.
Yeah.
Gordon makes his plays with the catch. And that's what Brady has been lacking at the wideout spot the last couple of years.
Yeah, okay, so good. I'm no crazier than I thought I was.
You watch him. I mean, he beat the Patriots that way. And that over... You know, or almost beat him in that game against New England, where the Patriots had to win a close one. Way back, I don't remember when it was, 5-6 years ago, when he was with the Browns. I mean, you know, he goes up and he gets the ball, and you shake your head. How do you do that?
Typical Patriot stuff here, right? I mean, it just happens. They live under a star. You know, Josh Gordon gets released, and now all of a sudden he's Randy Moss. So here we go.
It is amazing. You know, I didn't know if they were going to take a chance on Gordon, but I figured they might. You know, now listen, they're doing a good job with him. They have somebody who's around him a lot, and is kind of mentoring him there. They put the locker right next to Brady's. His post game, you know, stuff limited to 2 or 3 questions, and that's it. Get him out of there. And also, they get him to do it first. I mean, he's the first guy out usually, and they put him right at the podium. 3 questions. Bye, you know, and he stays out of the limelight. So they've done a good job that way in handling him. And now just, you know, it's like with any guy who's, you know, been you know, suffering with what he's been going through in terms of, you know, a lot of his own doing and everything else. But, I mean, the addiction problems, all that stuff, all of that, you just hold your breath on and say, okay, let's just see how things go, you know. And it's week to week to week. It's not year to year with this guy. It's week to week.
Tom King, you're the best. We'll touch base again. Have a great rest of your weekend, pal.
All right, guys. Take care.
The great Tom King, Patriot Insider. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, hey, Austin's Red Sox are in the World Series. I guess we got to talk about that.
We could.
Don't go anywhere.
You want to?
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Okay, you guys are done with your, oh my God, the Patriot love over here. I just had to, I was just drinking water and reading Facebook while you two were just talking about how special the Patriots are and the giddy feeling you get watching Brady.
Thank you for giving us that time.
Watching Brady throw the ball to Josh Gordon just gives you good feelings again and special and just, oh my goodness, as a Giant fan over here I am, I'm just melting away.
You guys gave the comparison between him and Randy Moss, and one of the interesting things is that his best season, he only played 14 games, he had three different quarterbacks, and he still
talking about Josh Gordon.
Yes, yeah. Josh Gordon. And he had more receiving yards than Randy Moss ever had in any one season. So the dude's up there.
And now he's a Patriot. I mean, just life is good.
That's beautiful.
I mean, the Patriots are the Patriots again. You got a Randy Moss light, I believe you use in terms of
Randy
Josh
Moss
Gordon.
Light, yep.
And now your Boston Red Sox are booked for the World Series, Austin. Does life get any better for you or what?
It could, but I'll take what I've gotten. I mean, it got pretty good this summer when the Caps won.
So that's what I'm saying. The year of Austin here so far.
We can keep riding this out, play the string out. No, to go from losing game one with the Red Sox against Houston, and then ripping off four in a row.
Yeah, that's
that
crazy.
Was, I mean.
But can we finally stop this this ridiculous media and, I don't know, the Red Sox fan myth that the Red Sox were some serious underdog, that they were this team that, they just don't have enough to beat Houston. I don't think they have enough to beat the Yankees. You know, just the underdog role that the poor Boston Red Sox, you know, this bullpen and Kimbrel and, and David Price can't pitch. And they were a 108-win baseball team with the highest payroll in baseball. This is where they should be today. I mean, last week we had, I've been talking to Red Sox. I mean, obviously, I know most of my friends are Red Sox fans. And everyone's been talking the doom and gloom about this baseball team for the last month. They're 108, and no one wants the grill in the room is that they're the highest payroll in baseball. No one even brings up. Now, I'm not trying to sound like, I'm a Yankee fan over here mad because that's all I heard about when the Yankees were great. But the reality here is this baseball team is loaded with two potential MVPs in the same lineup.
As a Yankees fan, you also know the difference between spending a lot of money and spending money wisely.
Well, of course, but again, you can argue about whether I have no problem, and I will say this publicly, and I've always said it. Like, I'd rather my team be relevant every year than my team be terrible for 3 years and build for a championship. I would much rather be relevant, so spend the money. So it's not my money anyway.
Right.
I want my team to be great, and the Red Sox spent the money the right way. But they've spent many monies the wrong way over the years as well. I mean, you know, we can go over that as well.
Yeah.
AKA Sandoval, AKA David Price in terms of, except for lately. So the point being is this is a really good baseball team.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And when that back end of that lineup hits, they're unbeatable.
Right.
I mean, they literally are unbeatable.
Yeah.
And in terms of the bullpen, I think you saw signs in the Yankee series that bullpen was coming around. You know, I understand the game, too. The Yankees, you know, they beat up David Price, and they got to the bullpen. And then late in the game, they got to the bullpen when the Red Sox got a little bit closer. But in game 4 and 5, the Red Sox bullpen came up huge. And I got to say this. They came up huge this whole series against Houston.
Right, but, like, they didn't really do it with emphasis. They just did it. And I think the lack of emphasis... When you're letting guys get on, you're getting behind in counts. You need a diving catch to get out of game 4.
Yeah.
Like that's stuff like that. It's not the most inspiring performance by the bullpen, but yes, it got the job done. They get a chance to play 4 games against 4 plus games against either of the NL teams that don't hit particularly well.
Our own Rich Haskell describes the Red Sox success depression really well. He talks about how Red Sox fans are used to winning in the regular season. They're also used to getting destroyed in the first round of the playoffs. And so every year when they're playing really well during the regular season, you're going to hear them talk about how, well, we have holes here. Well, we don't do this right. Well, that win didn't really feel like a win, because they feel like they're going to get to the playoffs and they're going to get stomped out. And then this year they didn't.
Well, Andrew in Fairfax just texted me and said, checks there on the Town Fair Tire text line, which you can text to 655-6672, or you can call us and talk to us, 802-655-6672. Your jealousy is oozing through the airwaves loud and clear. I'm not jealous. I'm not jealous of the Boston Red Sox. Listen, I have been the only person, last week, even the week before when Bernie was here, I've been the only person telling Red Sox fans, like, just relax. You have the best team in baseball. It doesn't mean you're going to win, but you have the best team in baseball.
I've said that
since day one.
The word I would describe you with right now is magnanimous, but
that word's way over my head.
We can hear...
I'm just annoyed at it.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's not pure magnanimity,
that word. Fair enough. I don't know what that means either. But again, the Red Sox are an insanely good baseball team. And again, when you have a lineup that boasts a Mookie Betts, and I'm just going to bring up two names, Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez, those two guys are MVP candidates in the same lineup. They have arguably the best defensive outfield in baseball.
That can also hit like crazy. JBJ?
I'm not doing that.
Oh, come on.
That's such a Red Sox thing anyway. Everyone's got a nickname. Jackie Bradley Jr. hits the way he's hitting. And how about that kid with those big hits? I mean, that's a guy that gets beat up by the Red Sox fans every day and has the two biggest hits in that ALCS.
We had Randy Moss light last segment. We got Ortiz light this segment.
Yeah, much lighter than David Ortiz.
He's JBJ when he's hitting. He's that bleep hole when he's hitting for 136 earlier in the regular season.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. And see, if you do it here, listen, Pedro Sandoval got that paycheck from the Boston Red Sox because of what he did in the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, Sandoval was an average, overweight third baseman his whole career with a great personality and a great nickname, and he was a star in World Series. And because of that, he got that huge contract from the Red Sox. But when he came to Boston, he was who he was. You know, and it ends up not working out. But if JBJ continues, I can't believe I just did it, continues this stuff, you got to love what you're seeing out of Benintendi. I think that kid is an absolute star. I understand you got a problem at third base defensively, but you can overcome that stuff between Devers and Nunez. You got another all-star shortstop. The second base position isn't in great hands, but I think you got to like what Brock Holt has done so far. You know, first base has been fine. You got good defensive catchers. And this rotation, when David Price is pitching well, and I think David Price's personality is helping him right now. I think David Price's, like, just leave me alone personality has created him to get into this position and be successful. I mean, the Red Sox, not only, you know, I'm going to predict them to win. I mean, I think if they lose two games in the World Series, I'd be shocked.
Yeah. And you're talking about contracts. What gets overlooked sometimes when you're the Red Sox or the Yankees is, yes, the Red Sox have the highest payroll, but part of that, if they're not in the process of developing or incorporating those younger guys into their lineup, their rotation, it's an arms race with whoever you're up against. So the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Cubs, the Red Sox, they're all in the market for the same player. So if you can get a player that you might overpay for, like a Price or a name, the guy, I think 5-6 years ago was Lackey, where you're like, this guy's got an unimpressive ERA. He's like sort of good for eating innings, but like he's not going to wow you ever. You're going to throw money at him because it means the other team didn't get him.
I think I've said this for years, and I said this, and I'll say it right now. Like, I think it sounds good to a team when somebody says, oh, my, you know, for example, we're so worried about how much money people spend or how much money teams spend. All you really worry about is wins and losses. And I think in baseball, you know, I'd much rather, like I said earlier, have your team be relevant all the time, meaning that if you're a baseball fan, the 162-game schedule, you are in it all the time.
Right.
Then have a couple seasons where you're in last place because you're hoping you can develop players. I mean, that's where everybody wants to be. I think everybody wants to be relevant. I think I don't have a problem with, in terms of how much money the Red Sox spend, I don't have a problem with it at all, but the fact that, you know, even professionals that do this for a living didn't think the Red Sox had enough. They're a 108-win baseball team.
Yeah.
With arguably, and I know Chris Sale may not be healthy, but I think he's the best pitcher in baseball. And I think that rotation is the best rotation in baseball. You talk about Porcello.
Porcello's been nice lately.
But he's been basically consistent all year. I think for the Red Sox, most of the losses they had late in the year was that it was sewn up. I mean, they had the Yankees beat in July. So, I mean, you know, this team is a really good baseball team. And really, they took it to Houston. I mean, Houston, who people thought had the best rotation in baseball, mm-hmm. the Red Sox took it to. I mean, this is a really good baseball team. I guess the only question
is... At their own place.
Yeah, go ahead.
So then I actually have a question for you guys. Do you think the Dodgers or the Brewers have anything for the Red Sox?
Well, I mean, I think both teams do. I think Los Angeles has a lineup that can compete with Boston's pitching. I do. They got guys that put the ball in play and they can score a lot of runs. And they have enough. They've got a decent. They got a great staff. I think Milwaukee is gritty. Like, I really like. I am rooting for Milwaukee. They're fun to root for.
That would be fun to see them in the series.
You know, but I think in terms of the best matchup for the, if you're hoping for someone to beat the Red Sox or you're hoping for a competitive series, I think Los Angeles is the team.
Yeah.
Oh, I just think they are. Sure. Yeah. John in Burlington says, we can't relax when everyone says our team won't matter if they don't win the World Series. And again, you don't have to relax. And John, and thanks for the text. We appreciate it. We're not saying that you shouldn't relax. I mean, you're trying to win a World Series. It doesn't matter who you are. But to think that you were the underdogs is the problem. Like, you shouldn't relax so you win the World Series. And if you win 108 games and you have the best record in baseball and you don't win the World Series, it's got to be disappointing. I think it is disappointing if you don't win at all, especially with the year that they've had. But the Red Sox are in really good shape, man. I can't imagine this team losing a World Series now.
Yeah, the reason you don't relax is because of situations like the 2007 Patriots. You can be the better team and still lose at the end, but that doesn't make you the underdog.
Thanks for bringing that up. That made me feel a lot better.
Also, you're welcome.
Also, I mean, how many days till the World Series is going to start? I mean,
it's just a few days.
Three or four?
Yeah.
Relax.
But now
that was literally the time to relax.
But now you can post up. But I guess you worry now is like, how long do you have? Now are you gonna get cool
That's
off?
That's overthinking it.
You know, you might cool off, and maybe JBJ will go back to being my favorite player. You know what I mean? Like
the 176.
Yeah, you know, you JBJ. Just don't know. I mean, you don't know what's gonna happen. But I think I will tell you one thing though. If you're looking for a team to root for, and you're not a Sox fan or a Dodgers fan, or just like baseball, the Brewers are a good team to hook your wagon up to. I mean, that's just a gritty group of guys that's not afraid of a fight, that stands up. Like, I love that baseball
team. And
if
they make it, we're definitely getting some Bob Uecker, which is
a perfect
national treasure.
You know, remember those commercials you used to make, the Miller Lite commercials?
Where, oh, yeah.
You know,
I was very young, but I've rewatched them on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Bob Uecker is one of the great men in baseball. If you don't know Bob Uecker, he's the he's a radio voice of the Milwaukee Brewers. He's been there forever.
And everyone probably knows him as the radio voice of the movies, the Major League movies.
That's right. That's right.
And there was great, totally aside, but great profile of Bob Uecker in SI probably 3.5 years ago. And he does these improvisational extensions of live reads during his broadcast that are just side-splittingly funny. He's talking about sausages in Milwaukee. It's like the sausage inning, and he could eat enough to, like, you know, basically just need a third stomach. Sort of. It's like, what? I could sit here and eat about 50 pounds. Like, what are you, like, the guy is just, he's a gem.
He's a legend. He's a legend. Gem. You know, it's funny. There's a lot of, I feel like it's baseball because baseball is 162 games, and it's every day. When you listen to these, and you listen to announcers every single day, they become part of the family. Bob Uecker is one of those guys that when he leaves the game, he's like the Harry Carey's, he's like the Phil Rizzuto's, he's, you know, Joe Buck's,
Jack Buck,
his father Jack Buck, those are the guys, yeah, not Joe Buck.
Much more well-liked than Joe Buck, but I don't have a problem with Joe Buck.
No, but yeah, his father was, but all those legendary announcers that are no longer in baseball are no longer with us, he'll be a loss when he goes because he's been one of the best forever. So who do you think, who would you rather have as a Sox fan, Austin?
I'd rather see Brewers as a Sox fan,
yeah,
on multiple levels, as we've just detailed.
A friend of mine on Facebook texted me a minute ago and said, I'd much rather have the Brewers because I feel like Los Angeles, the Red Sox, there's too much to do in L.A. You can get sidetracked in Los Angeles where there's not much happening in Milwaukee. Even though I've been to Milwaukee. That's a pretty fun town. There's a lot happening.
I've never been.
Bernie's a big fan because the name of the mascot for the Brewers is Bernie the Brewer. Right up his alley. You know what I mean? So Bernie wants to go down that slide.
I bet he does.
That's perfect for Bernie. You know, Bernie the Brewer.
You get the Dodgers, you have to deal with those Springer dingers, you know?
What's a Springer dinger?
I don't know.
I don't know what that is.
The batter, Springer.
Springer doesn't play for the Dodgers.
Springer?
Not anymore?
He plays for Houston, right?
Oh, that's
he never played. Nice try, though.
Uh-oh.
That's a hot take.
I flipped.
So, that was a hot take.
You're on timeout.
I flipped last year's World Series teams.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
What you have to worry about.
So we already dealt with those Springer dingers. We're good.
Exactly.
Yes. We're set.
In-N-Out Burger is what you got to worry about when you go to L.A.
Oh, yeah. In-N-Out Burger.
Oh, yeah. Come get some. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, out in left field. And listen, Aaron was telling me before the show started, he got a couple pretty good choices for out in left field. And they're both way, way, way out in left field. Don't go anywhere.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird sh-. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
We are back here on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. My boy Austin and I talking about places we want to visit coming up here. The big man, you're going, so you're heading to Austin.
Austin is going to Austin in late November.
I was telling you, my buddy Semi is a fireman down there. He's been down there for about 15 years. He loves that city.
That's, yeah.
And I'm going to Nashville. I'm going to a wedding in Nashville pretty soon, so I'm excited about that. I've never been to Nashville.
My friend who lives in Austin is named Dakota. So
is he going to go? You going to take him to North or South Dakota one of these times?
No, probably not. I don't really have a reason to go there.
Well, at least if you're going to do it, it's got to be summer. Don't go in the winter.
Yeah.
All right, we know what that music means. Out in left field, kiddo. What do you got today?
Man jumps naked in a shark tank at Ripley's Aquarium.
Of course.
Toronto police want to speak with a man who stripped naked and jumped into a shark tank during a jazz night at a popular tourist attraction in the city. Videos posted online show a bald man swimming in the tank.
It wasn't me. I'm just saying, I've not been there.
It kind of looked like you. Yeah. Are you sure?
It must have been handsome.
In Toronto recently?
Was he handsome? Might have been me.
They had to blur some of it out.
I'm sure.
I can tell you. Swimming in the tank as sharks and other fish pass underneath with a security guard yelling at him to get out of the water. At one point...
Did he cannonball in?
I don't know. I think it was just a regular dive, you know?
Oh, okay.
It didn't have any judges around, so no dove point in getting flashy.
Yeah, he just dove in. Wow, that's... Oof.
At one point, the video shows the man swimming on the side of the tank and getting out as onlookers laugh. The man then dives backwards into the pool. Oh, he did get flashy. And the crowd erupts and cheers, the video shows. As he leaves the tank a second time, the video shows a woman handing the man his clothes before he walks away.
That's nice of her. I don't know. Where'd he go
with
that?
How big are the sharks?
I'm not sure. They were a couple of reasonably large ones.
No, they have, you know, sharks jumping in, just decide to jump in naked. I mean, listen. And he's getting a standing ovation, and he has the ability to get out of the tank and for someone to get close enough to him to give him his clothes back. I mean, it's, you know, and he's still at large? Is that what the issue is here?
As far as I know, he's also wanted because he's believed to be the main suspect in an assault charge at a nearby Medieval Times restaurant. So he had quite the night. Yeah.
So he goes over to Medieval, he causes a ruckus at a Medieval, and then he just goes to jump. He goes,
dude is having a day dipping.
Within a couple of hours. Yeah,
I mean that's quite an hour. That's an afternoon. that's quite a day for that guy.
That's reminds me.
He's wanted.
Reminds me of the Caddyshack line. You know, skinny dipping, bullfights on acid. You know.
Yeah, was it Spackler? Is that who it was? Was it from
Carl Spackler?
Carl Spackler from Caddyshack? Is that his name?
Have you seen Caddyshack here?
I have still not seen Caddyshack. Oh, it's on my list.
See, that to me is more out in left field than this story. The fact that there's a human being out there right now that say, what, how old are you? 19, 20 years
there's
old?
There's actually several of them.
And you haven't seen Caddyshack yet? Do yourself a favor, man. That's one of the greatest of all time.
Pound for pound, minute for minute, probably. And I'm biased because I'm a golf guy, but like, that's as pure a comedy as you can get.
I don't know what station had it, and I should have texted you. I almost did. I don't know if it was A&E or History did a documentary of behind the scenes of the making of Caddyshack.
Oh, it got to be electric.
It was a 3-hour show, and it was insanely good.
Twice as long as the movie.
It was crazy. Maybe it wasn't 3. Maybe it was 2.5 hours, but it was a long thing, and it was all about the background and like how they got everyone together and how it came to be. Try to find it.
Okay, like Chevy Chase and Bill Murray
didn't like
weren't
each other.
Talking.
Exactly. Yeah, they didn't like each other.
And they filmed it in like a month.
But they felt like they had to have a segment together. They were the two biggest stars at the time. It's a great, great segment. You had it. You got to see it. It's unbelievable. But I can't believe you haven't seen that movie. Have you seen Slapshot?
I haven't gone to that one either yet. Hey, I've seen Space Jam.
Space Jam. You're putting Space Jam and Caddyshack in the same.
No.
Come on. Come on now, kiddo.
Unrelated Chevy Chase fact.
Sure.
He was in a college band with the guys that became Steely Dan.
No kidding.
Mic drop.
What did he play?
I don't even know.
Cowbell?
He's a talented guy. He probably played multiple instruments, I'm guessing. But I read a thing about Chevy Chase the other day, and that was the wildest. I was like, wait, huh?
That's crazy. Yeah, I don't know if they just don't make movie stars and comedians and like action heroes the way they used to. I mean, like, is there an Arnold Schwarzenegger around anymore? Remember the like 80s and 90s?
The Rock.
The Rock, I guess, would be him. But in terms, you know... These movies, thumbs up from this guy.
Oh, man. Robert De Niro. What a guy.
It's time for your sports update.
Sports Saturday is back on 101.3 The Game.
morning. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. I'm your host, Jeff Paul. Austin Danforth filling in for the big fella. Bernie's out today. Just got a text from Chris from the Green City Garage. I'd rather the Sox face the Dodgers because, like the Sox, the Brewers are scrappy, and I don't want the Sox taking anyone lightly, and the Dodgers wouldn't be. Yeah, good point there. Interesting point. Sox are scrappy. Come on.
I just got to ask, what was wrong with my Robert De Niro statement?
Nothing.
Casino, man. Come on. That movie's a classic.
Casino. Another great movie. Goodfellas. That's one of my faves of all time.
And then in Untouchables as
Untouchables, another great movie. Another great movie. Yeah. I'm telling you.
Al Capone, not Al Pacino.
He was Al Capone.
Dang it. Yeah. Dang it. This has been a horrible day for me in terms of names and places.
Springer Dinger. That's another Springer Dinger.
I'm just going to shut my mic off.
All right, hey, listen, not only are the Red Sox in the World Series and people are excited about that, obviously your Patriots are playing well, so if you're a Boston sports fan, everybody's excited, but there's another team in Boston that's playing really well, and that's the Boston Celtics, and the NBA season has started. People are psyched about that. There's a lot of great storylines around that, and who better to talk to than our good friend from fansided.com, NBA insider, Ian Levy. Good morning, Ian. How's it going today, buddy?
It's going well. Glad to be on again.
Well, we appreciate you joining us here on the TikTok Leaders guest line on 101.3 The Game on Sports Saturday. So, Ian, season starts this week. People are excited about it. The Celtics have opened up, I think, the way people expect the Celtics to open up. Are they the team to beat in the East this year?
Well, I think last night in the loss to Toronto, I think we saw that it's going to be a really close race at the top of the Eastern Conference. Boston really had their way with Philly on opening night, and I think that opening night win was impressive because Irving really struggled. Hayward looked a little rusty, like you would expect, and their defense was exceptional. They really gave Embiid fits. Al Horford and Aaron Baines were superb on him, and the offense, you could just see how deep they are in terms of shot creation. So Irving and Hayward struggling a little bit. Jason Tatum picked it up. Jaylen Brown was fantastic. Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, they just have so many guys who can create off the dribble, who can space the floor, and if any of those guys have a tough matchup, they can really just sort of move the ball around until they find that weak spot in the defense. So yeah, I think Toronto has looked great. I think Boston is going to be right there, and I think Philly's going to come along as well. So I think you're going to see those three teams kind of jockey back and forth, beat each other up a little bit in the regular season, and then it'll all come down to matchups and health in the playoffs.
And obviously, there's a lot of reasons why the Celtics won't be clicking in all cylinders yet, but when this team gets healthy and when they start getting comfortable, I mean, they have a shot to be very special, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're one of the few teams in the league who I think has a real shot at beating the Golden State Warriors, in a series. And they're kind of this unique team where you can see both that they're going to be special right now, and then they have the potential to just get better and better because so many of their key guys are young. Watching them on opening night, you could sort of make an argument that Jason Tatum might actually be their best player right now this year. And that's, not an indictment of Kyrie Irving or Gordon Hayward, but just, speaks about how mature he is, how refined his game is, and how much he's already added just, one summer, one off season into his career.
Thinking of last night and then thinking ahead, knowing that, if the Celtics are going to get to Golden State in the finals, they're probably going to have to go through Toronto at one point or another. What is them getting Kawhi Leonard due to the rest of the Eastern Conference? I mean, how does that improve their chances?
Well, I mean, it really it's a huge deal for them. I think the Raptors, like the Celtics, have a chance to be really, really special this year, and especially on the defensive end. I mean, obviously, we know Kawhi's chops at that end. He's essentially replacing DeMar DeRozan in the lineup. So, you're going from a below average defender to one of the best in the league. But they also added Danny Green, who's an exceptional defender. And by, moving Jakob Poeltl out in that DeMar DeRozan deal, we can see that they're probably going to go a little bit smaller with their second unit. Serge Ibaka is going to play a lot of those second unit center minutes, which means more minutes for Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby. So, they're just going to get more of their versatile defenders on the floor, and I think they have a chance to be really special at that end, too. And Kawhi Leonard gives them, you know, gives them a different dimension. He can do what DeMar DeRozan has done for them the past couple of years. He can be, you know, a primary offensive initiator. He can run pick and roll. He can take people in isolation, and he can probably do it more efficiently than DeRozan can. But he's also comfortable in a supporting role. You know, he's a much better spot-up shooter and ball mover than DeRozan was. And so, you know, they've just sort of upgraded. They didn't have a lot of weaknesses last year, and they've sort of upgraded in all those spots.
Ian, one of the big stories in the offseason was LeBron James signing in Los Angeles with the Lakers. Does his signing make the Lakers a playoff potential here now, or do they, I mean, even a title contender?
I think a title contender is a real, real stretch. I mean, obviously you can't discount LeBron, and, you know, he's dragged some subpar teams, you know, pretty far in the playoffs before, but I think this Lakers roster is worse than, you know, right now. Obviously, there's more future potential, but right now I think is worse than the one that LeBron played with last year in Cleveland. And they're playing, you know, in a much tougher conference. So I think the ceiling for the Lakers is probably, you know, a 6, 7, 8 seed in the Western Conference, which means they're probably going to get, you know, Golden State, Houston, Utah, something like that in the first round, which is going to be a really tough matchup for them. So it wouldn't surprise me to see them get into the playoffs and sort of bow out quickly in the first round. But, yeah, they have a lot of interesting pieces. It remains to be seen how the young guys, you know, how they respond to playing with LeBron, how they respond to his intensity, the attention he brings to the team, and the ways that they have to play differently. You know, we've seen LeBron already sort of give up a little bit of the ball handling. Last year was something like he had the ball in his hands for about 7 minutes a game. An opening night, you know, was down to about 4 minutes. So he's giving some other guys some chances to run the offense too. But there's still a lot of adjustment for all of these guys compared to what they were running last year.
Ian, your take on LeBron James in general? I mean, the fact that he's, you know, he's played for all these different teams, and when you look at elite players, the ones that you remember, you know, the guys that are that you talk about forever, the, you know, the Larry Birds, the Michael Jordans, you know, the, you know, the Dr. J's, I don't know, you can go down a list. The fact that he's been moving around the way he does, will it change his legacy at all, you think?
You know, I don't know. It may, but I think also we may be entering an era where we see more player movement, especially from elite star players. You know, Kevin Durant, you know, I guess I would call him the best player in the league, who's, you know, from slightly younger than LeBron, you know, sort of that next wave, that next generation. And he's already switched teams once, got his ring with the Golden State Warriors, and, you know, maybe on the move again next year and be playing for a different team and maybe trying to build up a legacy somewhere else. But, you know, we hone in on the guys who just played for one franchise. But it's easy to overlook that, you know, there are guys at that all-time great list who played for a bunch of teams. You know, Shaquille O'Neal played for a bunch of teams. And, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar won rings with the Bucks and with the Lakers. And Wilt Chamberlain, you know, played on both coasts. And, you know, we hone in on those guys, you know, who stayed with one team forever, because, you know, there's something definitely attractive and appealing about that. But there are some guys on that all-time great list who, you know, it hasn't really hurt their legacy to, you know, have been sensational in 3 or 4 different teams.
I guess my only question would be is I feel like LeBron James is like, you know, we nowadays we sensationalize any great player. You know, I don't look at Kevin Durant and LeBron James in the same light. I look at LeBron James with, you know, the Tiger Woods, the Michael Jordans. I mean, there's a handful of athletes in our time, or any time, that I think transcend eras. And I think LeBron is one of those players. But LeBron's shtick will always be, I'm going to take my talents. I'm on a young team in Cleveland, but I'm going to take my talents to Miami. And then I'm going to take my talents back to Cleveland, and I'm going to go to Los Angeles. To me, it just feels different than all of those the Shaquille O'Neals and the Wilt Chamberlains, I mean, which is a completely different era. Just to me, this feels different, Ian.
Yeah, I think I think some of it is about, you know, what we bring to the, you know, what we bring to the conversation, our own personal perspectives and stuff. My take on it is, like, I think about Shaq as a comparison point. I think the thing for Shaq was ego to some degree. I think he wanted to sort of be the center of attention, and then when he moved to the Lakers, he wanted to be the center of attention on the league, you know, on the team that could be the center of attention in the entire league. I think LeBron, I think that first move to Miami was about he thought it would be fun, and I think he probably naively thought that the reaction would be very different. And I think all the moves since, I think he has sort of matured as a player. And obviously my judgment comes from the outside. I've never, you know, met him or talked to him, but I think he's matured as a person, and I think he honestly doesn't really care that much about his legacy, or at least in the way that, that people are going to define it. I think Los Angeles, I think he thought, this is a place I want to live. This is going to be a good place for my family. This is going to be a good place for my future. And, you know, there are ways that it makes sense as a basketball situation, too. Obviously, you know, you could make, you know, reasonable arguments for a bunch of different teams that he could have gone to this year or staying in Cleveland. But, yeah, I think he knew what the reaction was going to be. And I think he just, you know, this is where I want to be. This is what's best for me and my family. And, and that's what's most important now.
I think the difference with LeBron versus those other stars that have migrated from one team to another is the way he did it. That, like, those five or six words, I'm taking my talents to.
Yeah.
That, like, that was maybe the most regrettable line of the last 10 years in sports. Those other guys left and it was obvious they were taking their talents elsewhere, but he had to, like, put it out there almost third person, even though he didn't, LeBron is taking it. But putting it out there and articulating it like that changed almost everything about it.
And I agree. And
otherwise, it's just business.
I don't think the trip to Los Angeles now is the wrong one. I mean, this is late in his career. He wants to be in LA. That's fine. But I just feel like when you look at a player like LeBron, and again, I said it a second ago, I feel like he transcends athletes. Like, I think when we start using the word, I think Shaquille O'Neal is one of the greats to play there, but I think LeBron is greater than Shaquille. I think LeBron is one of those athletes, there's probably three or four of them that you can think of in the last 35, 40 years that, you know, is the greatest of an era, and that's LeBron James. And I just feel like he may not care about his legacy, but I think when you look back at him, it's just crazy to think that this is a guy that could have been a Cleveland Cavalier. He's the one, you know, like when you think of Michael Jordan, you think of the Chicago Bulls. You know, that's what you think of. You know what I mean? When you think of Tiger Woods, you think of golf. Obviously, it's one sport. And to me, I just feel like, I just wondered what you felt, somebody that's around these players and around, you follow this stuff much more than I do, what legacy means for him at the end of the day. And that's, you know, when you talk about the shrines, you talk about the Rushmores of great players, does that hurt LeBron at the end of the day because of that? And that just interesting conversation, I thought.
Yeah, I don't think anybody will have a problem putting him, you know, on the Mount Rushmore of basketball greats or, you know, wings or whatever. You know, people draw distinctions with, you know, Kareem and Wilt and kind of separate them out. But I think, you know, if anything's going to ding his legacy, I think it's going to be finals losses as opposed to, you know, switching teams and playing in other places. I think if you want to poke holes, you know, in the arguments for him as the greatest of all time or measuring him up against Jordan, I think it's going to be, you know, those imperfections, you know, on his resume. I think those are going to be much more important to people. And I think people will remember those much more than the fact that he played for four different teams.
All right, Ian, we're going to hold you too. So we're going to have you on a few times this season. Who do you got winning it this year?
You know, I hate to do this, but I lean to chalk. You know, I think we're probably going to end up with the Celtics and the Warriors in the finals, and I think the Warriors probably win it all. One of the things I will say for people who are cringing at that, you know, inevitability, I think the playoffs are going to be really fun this year. Even if Golden State wins it again, I think there's two or three teams in the West and, you know, three, maybe even four teams in the East who are good enough to really challenge Golden State in a series. And even if, you know, Golden State ends up winning in five or six games or something like that, I think we're going to have a series where it feels more in jeopardy than maybe it has in the past. You know, feels like there's more unknown, feels more possible. So it's going to be a fun ride, even if we end up in the same place.
Ian Levy, you're the best, pal. We'll talk to you again down the road.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Have a great day. Listen, you Boston fans are going to be, and it's going to be rough if the Celtics go.
You don't have to worry about me with the Celtics.
You're not a Celtics guy, right?
I'm not really NBA.
I don't have to worry about you. Bernie is what I got to worry about.
Yeah.
But for Boston, how about that, though? And the Red Sox can boast this a lot. Or the Red Sox. Boston fans can boast this. Patriots win. They've had seasons where the Patriots, Celtics, and the Red Sox have won. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is incredible. I haven't had that.
Thing with LeBron, the way he's moved, it almost feels like he's, like, campaigning.
Yeah, LeBron's in L.A. for different reasons.
But almost as socially conscious as he is.
He's definitely
like,
got himself
out there. It almost feels like he's, like,
he's become, no matter where you fall on the premises here, he's become a divisive character in some capacities, which is... you know, whatever you feel about that, that this isn't a political show. We're not going to get into politics. But for me, I just look at it as he is literally, he's Michael Jordan to me in terms of what he's done and how he's and what he represents to the NBA and the game of basketball. He's transcended. He's changed the game. But to me, it's like there's always this like asterisk with LeBron because the way it all went down. You know, I used to, when LeBron was in Cleveland in the beginning, you know, his first few years, like you were loving what they reminded me of what the Bulls did with Jordan. They built around him until they were a dynasty. That's where Cleveland was going. But he made a decision to go with Bosch and Wade and build the first super team. And that just took some luster off for me. And then to you know, when Miami was kind of at the turn where they weren't going to go, they go to back to Cleveland and they build around him. He gets a coach fired. And it just for a guy as special as LeBron James is, and for a guy that's got the talent that LeBron James has, and what LeBron James represents, he should be the next Michael Jordan. And to me, he's just not. But that's just me. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Jake Kent. Get your fantasy football questions ready. Hey, listen, I'm 1-5. I need some help. And Jake Kent's going to help me. I hope. Even though I'm asking him every week and I'm still not getting help. But get your texts in now. You can text us. You can call us at 655-6672 when we come back. Jake Kent coming right up.
Another day of sports talk in the Champlain Valley. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Every week, Austin, as you know, it's fantasy football week. You're a big fantasy footballer, right? You
remember that?
Yeah.
Clipboard Jesus is 5-1 right now. Borderline wagon, but we're in a dogfight this week.
So the Meat Sweats, who are the two-time champions of the Feather Earring League, are sitting at 1-5 and struggling. But I've had a lot of injuries, and I'm trying to piecemeal this thing together. It's not pretty. But our good buddy, fantasy football expert Jake Kent, joins us right now on the TikTok Dealers Guest Line. Send your texts in right now, 802-655-6672, or call us, 802-655-6672, if you want to call and ask a question to Jake. Trust me, you want to pay attention, especially if you need to win this week. Give us a call or send us a text. We'll help you out. Jake, good morning. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, before we get into it, I said it last week on the air because you weren't on last week. You did a great humanitarian thing last week. If you don't know, Jake went down and to help his family. It was from the panhandle of Florida and where the hurricane went through a week ago, and he went down to bring some supplies and to help out. So props to you, man, for what you did last week for a community that needs a lot of help.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. It was a good trip, and obviously we're very grateful. My family, despite losing some properties and things like that, everybody has now been found and healthy and happy. And it was a crazy whirlwind of a trip, 4 or 5 days, just in and out, kind of like Texas last year. I did that last summer as well. But yeah, I got in with generators and water, just drove from Atlanta because you couldn't find anything in the whole county. So pretty crazy time down there. So, you know, do what you can to help out wherever you can. And we're on the mend, though. We're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, the scenes were horrific. Were they as bad as it? I mean, did it look as bad as we saw on television?
Yeah, it really did. And I'm not a big fan of when people do things like use war analogies in day-to-day life. But truly, as much as I've ever been exposed to anything that could be called a war zone, it really was that. Hundreds and hundreds of giant pine trees down everywhere. The entire county in that area, almost the entire county without power, no water, no nothing. So it was really pretty breathtaking in a bad way. And they're going to be building back for a long time.
Well, Jake, it's awesome for what you did, and I'm glad your family's safe and you were able to help people out. So it's great stuff. So hey, listen, let's get back to the fantasy talk here. We're getting into the middle of the season now. Who's the guy you got to pick up on the waiver wire this week?
Yeah, so all sorts of change this week, with so big changes in trades, big changes in injuries. We can dive into a couple of different people I think you can explore given the recent changes. And so to touch on a couple of hot topics from yesterday, so obviously Carlos Hyde gets traded from the Browns, moves to Jacksonville. He's not really a guy that I'm interested in, largely because of they have a bye week. They have a terrible matchup the following week. Leonard Fournette may be back the week after that. He's not really a guy that I'm running out to get. Not to mention, he's just been really ineffective this week. So Carlos Hyde, the piece moving out of Cleveland, not really all that excited about him. That being said, the rookie Nick Chubb out of Georgia, that's a guy who obviously there's a lot of excitement about, and certainly I'm in favor of using Nick Chubb where you can, mostly because they're going to give him opportunities. They obviously want to see what he has and what he has as a rookie and what he can get going. But the opportunity's been there all year for Hyde. He just hasn't been good. He hasn't been great, I should say. He's about the running back 12 in most leagues, depending on your scoring. he hasn't been bad, and he's given lots of opportunity. He has 10 carries inside the 5-yard line. That's second most to Todd Gurley, surprisingly. So if they give Todd, if they give Nick Chubb anything near the type of goal line carries, third in attempts overall that Carlos Hyde was seeing, we could very well see Nick Chubb be very productive down the stretch. One of the reasons I start with Nick Chubb is because I want to stay on the Browns for a second. This week, if you're looking for pieces, there are actually a lot of pieces in Cleveland you can use. That's because they're playing the dumpster fire of a defense that is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're giving up about 400 passing yards a game, and everybody has been productive against them. So you can really look to plug in pieces even beyond Chubb. I think Baker Mayfield, though he has not been great, if he can't be great this week, it's time to hit the panic button. He should be very good this week. And they have two receivers, one of which you've probably heard of, Antonio Callaway. Good receiver, getting lots of targets. Hasn't been great. He's been pretty inefficient with those targets. But again, against this defense, it's a week where if he just absolutely has to be productive. The other guy, I think he's available probably in 98, 99% of leagues, is Damian Ratley. He's a rookie out of Texas A&M. He had 8 targets last week, caught 6 of them for 82 yards. He looked really good. So Damian Ratley, maybe just slightly less so Antonio Callaway, just because I don't think he's quite as dynamic. Both receivers in Cleveland you could pair up with Baker Mayfield if you needed to, but really any of those pieces against Tampa Bay have a chance for a real high ceiling this week.
All right, Jake, we're starting to get some texts coming in here on the Town Fair Tire text line. First one is Miles from St. Albans. He says, should I trade David Johnson for Odell Beckham Jr.?
So other big changes, right? So a lot of changes this week on the fantasy landscape. Thank goodness, I've been saying it since week 2, but it was time to fire Mike McCoy. He just about ruined Melvin Gordon as a rookie running back out in San Diego. Melvin Gordon, maybe the second best running back in the league, didn't have a touchdown his rookie year, if you remember, all because of Mike McCoy. We talked about it in week 2 and in week 3. The usage around David Johnson is bizarre. It was like 70% of his carries were straight behind center, straight up the middle, and a handoff that started 7 yards behind the line. They were not putting him in a position to succeed in any shape or form. So he's gone. So we start fresh, hopefully, right? So we hope that we see, and I don't know a lot about Byron Leftwich as a play caller, just because he's obviously very new to that role. He's been the quarterback coach. We hope that we see a lot more creativity and a lot smarter usage of David Johnson. So typically I would say I'm going to wait and I'm going to keep David Johnson, who I think on a talent scale has got to be a top 1 or 2 running back in the league. Obviously OBJ has some appeal if it's a PPR league in particular, but I'm probably going to ride it. It all would depend on your team construction, but more than likely I'm going to ride it out with David Johnson and see what kind of changes we see over the next couple of weeks.
655-6672 is the number to call if you want to ask Jake a question, or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Todd on the text line comes up with Trey Burton or O.J. Howard at tight end standard scoring.
Yeah, so tight end, right, has been a real garbage show this year. It's been really tough, other than, you know, you have your guys, Zach Ertz is going to be productive, Travis Kelce generally is going to be productive. But beyond that, it's been really bad. So I'm not that excited about anybody at tight end, but we do have to start one. I have them ranked right next to each other. I have them both right around, you know, 8 or 10 points in the PPR. The better matchup is Trey Burton. New England, I think, I need to brush up on this probably, but last I checked, they were 30th or 31st against tight ends in the league, so surprisingly bad against tight ends. Trey Burton does line up in some creative ways. I think he has the upside. But in that game, that likely will be a shootout because Tampa Bay can't stop anybody, I'd be fine with starting O.J. Howard. So I'm really happy with, in either case, I think I give the slight edge to Trey Burton.
Okay, I'm looking at it. I got a flex issue right now. I got 3 good options, I feel like, anyway. I'm looking at, and it's PPR league, I got Julian Edelman, Sony Michel, Tevin Coleman, all vying for the flex spot on my team.
Yeah, so I'm probably starting the 2 Patriots. And while as you've probably learned over the years, I don't love starting New England Patriots on my fantasy teams, just because typically it's very difficult to predict what's happening in terms of target share,
right,
on a week-to-week basis. That being said, I like Coleman. I always have. The problem is you now have this new kid. I think it's Ito. I'm not even sure how to pronounce it.
Yeah, Ito Smith. Yeah.
Ito Smith, who's kind of all of a sudden shown up, and it's been very good. He's playing over 50% of the snaps, which is a lot for a guy who we haven't really seen anything from previously. He's been productive with those snaps. Coleman has not been the guy we've seen in years past, not as productive, not as dynamic when you watch him. He's still getting volume. It makes me nervous that they're exploring this world of Ito Smith. So I think that the safe thing to do, despite having a pretty good matchup overall, the safe thing to do is probably play Edelman and play Sony Michel, assuming both are healthy, as much as the Patriots will tell us.
Yeah, I was leaning Edelman just because if Mac gets into the backfield or they start getting to Brady, if he's going to have to be getting the ball out quickly, that sets up perfectly for Edelman.
Bears are terrible against wide receivers.
That so too, yeah.
Certainly the upside is there, and in the PPR league, he's certainly going to see targets. I think that's the easy answer. Then I would rank it Michelle, and then I think lastly Coleman.
Cool, so I was on the right path.
We got another question on the text line here, kiddo. Is Albert Wilson worth a start, currently starting Deshaun Jackson? Is Albert Wilson worth a start? Currently, this person starting Deshaun Jackson.
Oh, in place of. So Albert, I wish I would have been on last week. Albert Wilson was my guy. So I started him in every format last week, 36 PPR points. On DraftKings, he was 0.3% owned, 0.3% owned. But the kid has got wheels. I like him a lot. So the right answer here probably is just to start Deshaun again in what's going to be more than likely a high-scoring affair. With Tampa Bay giving up 400 yards a game, they don't really have any choice but to throw and then throw and then throw some more. No one's really that excited about the running back situation there. I would say generally your default answer this week is going to be start guys from Cleveland, start guys from Tampa. Let's hope this thing just gets crazy. But I'm thrilled to hear somebody has Albert Wilson hanging around, and I think he's going to be very, very good. Came from the Chiefs last year where he just was buried on the depth chart. But the kid's fast, the kid's talented, I like him a lot.
Jake, who's your most disappointing player this year? Going into the season, you were really high on, it just has been a disappointment.
Probably David Johnson, right? So I think I had him ranked in my top three. I mean, for me, before we found out about Le'Veon Bell, it would have been Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson in some order. Typically, I have David Johnson above Le'Veon Bell even. So I think obviously it's him. We've talked a little bit about his situation with McCoy, and maybe we should have, and frankly, probably I should have been less optimistic about McCoy, the offensive coordinator in Arizona. But I feel like I should have, knowing what happened with Melvin Gordon in his rookie season, I probably should have been more in tune with that and just simply wouldn't have expected a sudden change in the way that was managed. I just simply thought because David Johnson is so incredibly talented that we would see more from him. So I think that for me, it's probably David Johnson running away from everybody else.
I would like to just say that I just picked up Albert Wilson off the waiver wire just now.
Oh boy,
nice. Just now.
I like it.
I'm gonna plug him right in this week. What the heck, right?
Yeah.
I'm 1-5. Let's just go for it.
You know, I mean, when you're 1-5, and believe me, I've had years where I'm 1-5 and I've ran the table. It's still there for you. You know, you don't have to feel like you're out of it. But you do have to do some creative things sometimes, and generally it's because of injuries and just general roster construction resulting from injuries. But you can play it really, it can very much become, and this is true all the time, it really is a weekly game that we manage for a whole season, but you can really play it almost like a weekly contest, like a DraftKings contest. Look every week for that quarterback, wide receiver, low-owned matchup that you can stack in a great matchup and look to just have really high-ceiling plays. So again, we talked about this week, I think those guys are people like Baker Mayfield, Antonio Callaway. You know, look for weeks where last week I started, believe it or not, I started Brock Osweiler and Albert Wilson, both sub 0.5% ownership because the ceiling was there against the Bears. And so that you can really start to manage your season-long team in that manner where you say, forget it. I don't care about injuries anymore. I don't care about minimizing risk. I don't care about the floor. I'm building for ceiling on a week-to-week basis. If I have to clear my bench every week, I'll clear my bench every week.
Let me just say this. This should go on your resume in terms of fantasy football expert. The fact that he made that move with those two Miami Dolphins last week shows you the kind of talent that this guy is.
That's
the great
crazy.
Jake Kent. Jake, we only have a couple minutes. How do people follow you during the week, pal?
Yeah, at Jake Kent VT. So just hit me up on Twitter if you have any questions, anything you want to discuss. I think this is going to be a fun one, and we're kind of getting to the heart of the season here. So let's get geared up for the playoffs. If you are 5-1 or if you are 6-0, it's not too early to stop dropping pieces you may not want to, in preparation for having a solid bench with high upside matchups in the playoff season. So start thinking ahead.
fantasy football expert and humanitarian, Jake Kent. Thanks, Jake, for the time, kiddo. Talk to you next week. All right. Albert, right there. That example right there, Albert Wilson. I'm sitting here listening to him talk. I'm like, I wonder if he's still available in my league. And sure enough, there he is. So I just made the addition, and now I expect to make a big run. Because the guy that I'm mad at on my fantasy team is Trey Burton. I drafted him, like, high in terms of, because he's supposed to, I thought he was going to have a huge year. All the experts said that, and he has been the big bust for me in terms of points, Austin.
My bust was Amari Cooper. I think I got him like fourth or fifth round.
What's happened to the Raiders?
John Gruden doesn't know how to coach football in the 2010s.
But they weren't good last year either. But there were injuries, I guess, last season too. But that team was a team that was like they were up and coming. Like,
yeah.
This is a team that's going to be, I mean, you're talking about young guys, you know, and with a young, good quarterback. Like, right. What is, and they had the best linebacker in football. Like, what's happened to the Raiders? That's a perfect example of the NFL. It's a year-to-year league, unless you're the New England Patriots.
Gruden, like, getting rid of Khalil Mack and then talking crazy about, like, how they don't have a pass rush. Oh, God. Like, just sound more clueless.
Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff it is. It is. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's our favorite time. Hot or not time. Brady may not like it, but we love it. Don't miss it. We'll be right back.
I wouldn't bother with those winter coats because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's time for Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. Just got your fantasy football stuff set with my good buddy Jake Kent. And now it's time for Hot or Not. Go ahead, kiddo.
Hot or Not is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in Williston.
Cupcakes, man. Mm-hmm. The best.
Mm-hmm. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around. They won't disappoint, offering a large variety of regular and mini cupcakes as well as edible cookie dough daily. They're open every day but Monday. Get them early as hours are subject to change if they sell out. That's all you got to say?
Well, I mean, they're just the best cupcakes I've ever had. They're located right behind Ramonto's. I get them all the time for the staff, for events. If you haven't had a Superb Cupcake yet, do yourself a favor and go have yourself one, because they are, not only are they just delicious in terms of what they make, but the different selections they have, insanely good. And the Salted Caramel one was ranked the number one cupcake in, I think, in New England or in Vermont. They won an award. They don't brand it enough. I tell the owners all the time, like, you got to brand that. You got the number one cupcake in the, you know, in New England or something.
Right.
Go check them out. They're in the Taft Corner Shopping Center. They're the best. You know, I like to take the bottom off and make it like a sandwich. That's kind of, my wife showed me that.
Right. Turn into a whoopie pie almost.
Exactly. Yeah, it's easy to eat.
Yeah.
Keeps the stuff off the fingers.
Right.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Next level.
My mom lives by that advice.
Yeah, it's good advice.
Usain Bolt will replace Bo Jackson as the most successful two-sport athlete.
Okay, I'm going to start this. This is a not. I know Usain Bolt is now playing soccer, okay, and I get that he's a tremendous athlete and fast, but there is never going to be anyone like Bo Jackson. Bo Jackson was arguably maybe the greatest athlete ever to live. If he didn't get hurt, it would have been so crazy to see what he would have done with baseball and football. He was the best football player in the world, and he was the best baseball player in the world at the same time.
Yeah, I'm not on that too. Like, I watched the highlights. One of the goals Bolt had, he took really well. He's playing in the Australian League, which is like A-League is like the ninth or tenth best league in the world. It's not great soccer. It's well below MLS. He's fast. He has an okay touch. Okay.
Yeah.
But, like, he was playing against an amateur side, went in when they were up 6-0. So, no.
Well, and the other piece is, I mean, you're comparing him to Bo Jackson. So, regardless of how good his touches and how much, I don't care if he was playing.
Well, in terms of his accolades, the fact that Bo Jackson is the only athlete to ever be an all-star in two sports.
Sure, I understand. But I think when you talk about Bo Jackson and what he did, I mean, I think he's the greatest athlete ever to live. It's sad to see what happened to his career being short-circuited to that hip injury, because Bo Jackson was the greatest athletic player I've ever seen in his life. Was he made that catch in Yankee Stadium and ran up the side and ran the side of the wall?
Yeah.
I mean, if you haven't seen that, YouTube that and see what he did.
There's the famous run against the Seahawks where he trucked a guy and then ran away from everybody else.
Yeah, and he ran up into the tunnel. Yeah.
He couldn't slow down, so he ran into the tunnel.
Bo Jackson was the best. Bo Jackson was the best.
Yeah, he's special.
I can't argue with Bo Jackson being the greatest athlete of all time. The accolades thing, I think, is a different conversation, but that dude is a freak.
Hey, man, Bo knows sports, buddy. Bo knows.
The Khabib assault took more pressure off of Dana White than it actually put on him.
You know, I'm not a huge UFC guy, so I'm not into it, but I feel like UFC is a little more organized wrestling. So, you kind of feel like it's these little storylines that happen, you know, especially Conor McGregor seems to bring these things along, you know, obviously. I don't know how I feel on this. I would say, read it back to me one more time.
The Khabib assault took more pressure off of Dana White than it put on him.
No, I think it put a lot on him. He's the one that's ahead of UFC. I mean, you know, you got assaults happening after matches are over. You got people fighting in the stands. I think there's a lot of pressure on Dana White.
I'm gonna just hard pass on this because UFC is nothing to me. It's clearly it's taken the mantle that boxing had as far as fighting sports prominence in society, and this is exactly why. Like, this isn't going to break UFC.
Right.
Like, it's just another storyline that keeps people talking.
Yeah, I mean, it's
going
to help you. I agree with you, and that's what I mean. I don't know if there's pressure. You don't know how much is staged and how much isn't staged. I mean, you feel like there's so many shticks with these guys. I mean, Conor McGregor is what, their cover boy, you know, and he's like a WWE entertainer. I mean, you don't know what's real and what's not. Right. So, for someone that's me, and obviously I think you're the same way, like, I feel like I'm the very passive fan. If my friends say, hey, you want to come over and watch the fight, maybe I'll go over and watch it, but half the time I'm asleep before the main event starts because they start at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
But, it's hard to say, but I would say if it's real, then I think you have pressure on the you know, the guy that's running the show, so, but who knows?
I formulated one simple equation that I think really helps Dana White out, which is one famous fighter plus an attack by a less well-known fighter equals two famous fighters.
That's a good point. And I will say this about UFC. I was in Boston a couple years ago, and we were at an Irish bar. I went to see Virginia play Boston College afterwards. Conor McGregor's posse crew trainers, while he was at home resting for the fight the next day, all came into this Irish bar, and I have never been around a crazier group of people. Those people were wild. It was like being in the movie. You ever see the movie Snatch with Dave? Fight for it. They are. So, they were incredibly fun and incredibly wild, and the things that they were doing were crazy. But one of his trainers, from 2 feet, jumped up onto a bar table and did a split. Just jumped 2 feet up, did a split with the Irish flag wrapped around his shoulders. Incredible athlete. Wow. So, yeah, crazy stuff. Did it just get hot in here?
Oh, yeah, it did. Actually, literally,
is
just
this
got
place
hot
on,
in here.
I'm telling you, this
we
this,
went
this,
from
this,
like 68
yeah,
to like 82.
Yeah, this is crazy.
I told you, this segment brings the heat.
This place is haunted. This room's got menopause.
The Mookie Betts catch was the right call.
Yeah. So, that's Joe West being Joe West, in my opinion.
I can't defend that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's the right call. I mean, I've always felt like as soon as the ball goes into the stands, you know, a player, a person can't reach over, you know, like you saw with the play with the Jeter back in the late 90s. But I felt like that ball was in the stands. I think it's a tough call for Houston, but I can see where it wasn't overturned. Because it's too, you got to stay with whatever.
Gray,
but that's typical Joe West umpiring for the, you know, has to make, he it's always about Joe West. And you know that if it's going to be a controversial call, that guy's going to do it.
Yeah.
So I guess I didn't answer. I would say, was it the right call? I'm going to say not. I think it was, I don't think it was the right call.
I'm not too.
I had multiple classmates try to argue that it was the right call. All I'm going to say is, regardless of whether or not it's technically the right call based on the rules, if someone were to smack my glove closed while I was trying to make a huge catch over the wall, I'd jump back over and punch him in the head.
Yeah, well, you don't want to do that. All of a sudden, you become UFC. But again,
if the roles are reversed, I'd feel hard done by as a
of course. And I'm not saying it's, you know, I think that it was, the call was made, and obviously a great athletic play by Mookie Betts. But at the end of the day, when you go into the stands, the fans have a right to that ball as well. So that's why I think it comes down to, you know, it was a judgment call and it went the Red Sox way. And again, another reason why you're probably going to win the World Series is calls like that matter in the playoffs. Right. You saw it happen in 96 with the New York Yankees and Derek Jeter.
If Khalil Mack is healthy on Sunday, the Patriots will walk away 4-3.
You want to take this one first?
Not. Patriots are winning. Come on.
Yeah, I'm going to say not as well. What I saw out of Chicago last week at Miami, I think New England is going to move the ball okay with the NFL, score enough points. I don't know if Chicago can do that. I think Chicago's a coming team, but I don't think that that Khalil Mack is healthy either. You know, so I can't imagine the Patriots. This is the Patriots, and we're getting to be midseason. They're going to win in Chicago.
Manny Machado deserves a suspension.
You know, I'm going to say not based on the fact that what you saw out of him with that ugly slide and then him kind of kicking the foot of the first baseman of Milwaukee, those can be judgmented as mistakes. But not a good look for a guy that's getting ready to be a free agent and might be looking for a big paycheck and might be looking at a team like maybe in the Bronx where the Yankees are going to be looking for a shortstop and looking for that guy. Not a good look for Manny Machado right now, no question. A guy that had a lot of help in terms of what happened with him in the Red Sox a couple years ago in terms of some, you know, the hitting and then Pedroia saying it wasn't me. Manny kind of looked like the victim there. This isn't a good look for Manny Machado.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods versus Phil Mickelson is the biggest sporting event in November.
I'll let you go with this.
I'm buying high here. It's amazing they haven't thought of this sooner. And granted, Tiger's been hurt for 3 or 4 years now, but like, this is a no-brainer. They used to do the skins game back in the day. That were like Thanksgiving weekend and pre-tape. You could enjoy like 9 holes one day, 9 holes the next day. This, like, a live money match between these two guys, like, we haven't seen anything like it in a long time.
You know, I'm going to say not, only because, in my opinion, I feel like, you know, Phil is done. Like, I feel like Phil's on the other side. And I feel like Tiger, obviously, we're having a comeback with him. And I think if it was Tiger versus, you know, pick...
Rory?
Rory McIlroy. Pick somebody that you can actually... I guess what that's come down to is, and I've talked about this with golf in the past, because I'm a big golf fan, as you are. Golf in the 80s and 90s, there were guys you rooted for and guys you didn't like. You know, there were rivalries. And I mean, I spent a lot of time on the PGA Tour. I was at a lot of events. I remember the rivalries that there were. The guys that didn't like each other. And, you know, you had crowds of people that followed this player, and you had crowds of people that followed that player. And there were rivalries. Nowadays, I don't see it. If this match happened 10 years ago, 12 years ago, I'd be all in. And I'm going to be all in on Thanksgiving weekend to see it just because I think it's a great spectacle. But I don't think it's the most important thing to see because I feel like there are two guys that may be on the other side. And I just feel like the rivalry isn't there anymore between the two.
I think it's going to be the most watched non-football sporting event of November.
Oh, you might be right. You might be right.
UVM will win one of their two games between Louisville and Kansas this year.
I think Louisville's gettable. So I'll take that. The tricky thing is, you're looking, Kansas is probably going to be a preseason top five, if not number one.
Yep.
And I just pulled up their schedule. They start at BU on the 9th. They play at Kansas on the 12th. They play against Linden at home on the 14th. And then they go to Louisville for the 16th. Which, that Kansas, Linden, Louisville, everyone has that stretch. No one has that stretch on their schedule.
Right, right.
But, like, that's just a wild Kansas, Linden, Louisville. Like, who's ever played those three teams ever?
Yeah, I will say this. You know, this is going to be a big year for UVM. I think the way it ended last season was just so disappointing. You know, even with what UMBC did, I came to bring up against my Cavaliers in the first round of the NCAA tournament. You know, but the fact that UVM just had the season that they had and it ended the way it ended was very difficult to swallow. The schedule is awesome, and I think that's awesome for Vermont. I love the fact that they're playing Kansas and Louisville. I'm going to say not. I think it's difficult to go into Louisville and win a game, even though what you saw to that team last year going to Kentucky and almost beat a Kentucky team that's coached by John Calipari. I'm going to say not, but man, I'm going to be rooting hard. I mean, that's a program that I just am so proud of, to being from Vermont, and I love what Coach Becker's doing there. It's going to be fun to see what they do.
I think that week from the 9th to the...
To be Linden in that.
Linden is playing an NIT game, an NIT season tip-off game. That's one of the three.
Good for them.
But like,
awesome.
From the moment that BU game ends through the tip-off of Louisville, I bet those, like, JB and the guys are not getting much sleep. They got to be grinding over so much film.
But just think about this for a minute. If they were able to get one of those wins and they take care of business, that's a team, if they win their, and this is what makes you think about this team, is that this can set you up. If you are as good as you think you are, and say you steal one of those games against Kansas and Louisville and you take care of business with all the other schools, these are defining moments that if you get in the NCAA tournament, instead of being a 14 or 15, you're an 11 or a 12.
They're in the point now where if they could get through non-conference with like two losses-ish, and then do what they've been doing in conference, that's how you get the chance for an at-large bid. They probably won't because the NCAA selection process is so stacked against them, but that's the only formula in which that can happen.
And the fact we're talking about this, about the UVM men's basketball, tells you everything you know about that coaching staff and what they've done there.
Yep.
Anyone that's going to get on Coach Becker and that staff needs to check themselves, because what he's done with this program and the fact that we could even be talking potentially about an at-large bid because of their schedule says everything about them.
He's probably going to say something to me next time he sees me about, like, well, you can't talk about this at-large stuff. But
You may not like to hear about it, but he's gotten them in the position now that they can be that special. I think that says a lot about them. All right, that's Hot or Not for the week. Good job, buddy. Well, well, well done. Excellent work. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we tie a bow on this show. Can you believe it went by so fast? Don't go anywhere. No.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Some interesting news just came across here. I just saw, folks, want to announce and congratulate our own Aaron Wells here for receiving the Vermont Association of Broadcasting Scholarship for Academic Performance, Energy, and Exuding, and the belief that Aaron is headed in a great... So you won a great award here. I'm trying to read this, but you basically you're going in the right direction in broadcasting, and your school gave you a broadcasting award for this and a scholarship. Congratulations, buddy.
Yeah, thank you.
Attaboy.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff. That is awesome stuff. And I hope you understand how special that is. I mean, there's especially what you because you're going to school for this, which people may not know. So you are going to school right now for this at
NVU Linden. I was chosen for this by people from the department who have worked in the field, who are names in the area in terms of media. They know their stuff, and it's definitely an honor to receive it from that department.
Congratulations. That's a big deal. So And look, he's our producer. I mean, how about that? I mean, how lucky are we? So what are you going to do? So listen, now, I mean, that's just good. Your mom must be stoked about this, $1,000 towards school. That's a good thing.
Yeah, my dad was really excited about the scholarship. He was also excited when he heard why I got it. But when he saw $1,000, he's like, woo!
Well, we are very, very proud of you, kiddo. And we're happy to have you here on the show on 101.3 The Game here, Sports Saturday. Austin, great job, buddy. Probably got to go back to work to figure out what's going to happen with some high school football today because there's some big games.
Going to Jericho for that game between the Cougs and the Slaters. And then,
interesting matchup that they're playing last game of the season. It's a Fairhaven Mount Mansfield matchup.
Yeah,
What's up with that?
Because the Burlington, South Burlington.
Oh,
merger.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's today. And then Monday, we got playoff pairings, predictions, all that good stuff.
And then this next week, everything else, playoffs start next week. Yep, so,
and full wall to wall coverage on the Free Press website.
This is like a big deal for this week coming up, right? This is like
the next 2.5 weeks are going to be
you and Alex
gnarly.
Are
going to
be all over the place.
Yeah.
All over the place.
OT season.
Appreciate you coming in and doing this today with Bernie out. Big weekend for the Red Sox. And listen, you know, obviously the Red Sox are waiting to see the winner today. If you listen to the station today tonight at 9:30, the Bruins are at Vancouver. And tomorrow, the Patriots play the Bears. Coverage starts right here on 101.3 The Game at 10 o'clock in the morning. Big game. Then if after that, you still want some football at 7:30, they're going to have the Rams in San Francisco here on 101.3 The Game. Hey, listen, guys, have a great weekend. It's going to be cold. You're hitting the links tomorrow, right?
Yeah. Sadly, yeah.
So that's going to be really bundle up time for you.
I'm thinking layering strategy like days ago.
Now I know that you're playing at the course that you're playing usually has like the collared shirt rule. So I mean, does it get away with a little bit? Can you get away with not having the collared shirt in a day?
I wore jeans for this a couple years ago. And okay, it was real cold, so but like, it's casual.
Because that's pretty sacrilege when you wear jeans to a golf course. Some of these places, like, you leave. I mean,
I know, but like, I know the people running.
Nah, you're Austin Danforth. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we're Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game, 101.3TheGame.com. We're here every Saturday from 10 to noon. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great one.